Chapter 15. The Kupo system was beautiful, in that it was free of any Imperial fleet ships. "This is good. We're going to have to land and make repairs," I said. "The Jewel couldn't outrun a Bantha right now."
"Do you have some place in particular in mind?"
Nakari asked. "I will in a minute. Remember that list of Kupoans that Sokhet gave us back on Dinan? She probably didn't expect us to wind up on her home planet, but maybe there's a name there we can contact."
"Oh, right. The file was supposed to decrypt using Rancor sauce. Hang on."
She left the cockpit to retrieve her data pad, and I set a course for a smaller city on the opposite side of the globe from the capital. I'd adjust as necessary. And thanks to the peculiarities of the planet, I was looking forward to the challenges of any adjustments. Kupo had achieved a somewhat legendary status among pilots. It was supposed to be constantly buffeted by howling winds. Seriously loud, dangerous winds, not gentle breezes, that not only made piloting difficult, but also interfered with hearing. So much white noise whipped around on the surface that most off-world beings had to communicate via helmet intercom. Either that or shout. Or use sign language. The Kupoans had evolved their frequency filter organs to screen out all the noise and detect voices. And of course it helped them hunt as well. There was an entire ecosystem of creatures that lived in the wind. Animals that rarely, if ever, landed, spending their entire existence in the air. Pilots that had to go in with their shields up or risk taking damage for the larger beasts, and then hope the winds didn't toss them into the ground like poorly flown kites. Out of necessity, the Kupoans had built tall baffles to help pilots land on the surface rather than crash. They had dozens of recommended atmospheric entry points where the wind patterns were merely annoying rather than terrifying, and you had to ride them out until you could drop down behind a mountain range or one of their baffles and settle down. Even then, you'd have to worry about rogue gusts and eddies, but they had the approach routes to most places worked out to at least a modicum of safety. Nakari returned, datapad in hand.
"There's a contact here listed in the city of Tonek, on the eastern continent. Name is Azur Nessim." "Hold on a second. Let me see if we can bring up some more information."
Switching from her datapad to the ship's computer, which could access Kupo's infonet, maintained by satellites and orbital platforms, she typed in a query and growled at a mistake that forced her to delete it and redo, punching the keys and showing that word who was boss. There was a lag in processing due to the distances involved, but the net worked well, and an information dump appeared soon enough. Nakari summarized.
"Azur Nessim is founder and head of Nessim Courier and Cargo. He has facilities scattered about the planet, but its headquarters matches the location that Sokhet provided in her files."
"All right, we'll head there. Good business to be in for a spy, eh?"
"Yeah. Gives him a legitimate reason to go anywhere."
"And if he has his own fleet, that means he could have his own repair facility." I changed course in accordance with the recommended atmospheric entry point for Tonek, and asked R2 to attempt to reach Nessim via comm using the number Sokhet had provided. Meanwhile, several different ships in orbit and entities on the ground were trying to reach us, all of them asking for our names and business.
"Inquisitive lot, aren't they?"
Nakari remarked after the third time she told someone we were tourists here to enjoy Kupo's windsurfing. Though the Empire strictly controlled the interstellar holonet, the Kupoans had a local system infonet set up almost of necessity to exchange weather information and help ships land safely. We received a call from Azur Nessim within minutes of R2's comm request. He popped up on our holodisplay, a stocky individual wearing a vest, his arms folded across his chest. At some point, he'd lost a bite-sized chunk of his left basal ear and had never had it surgically improved. The fur hanging down underneath his jaw was long, braided, and beaded, which struck me as unusual for a Kupoan because it would make distracting noises when he moved. I didn't know if it meant he belonged to a secret society or if it was a fashion he had chosen to offend society as a whole.
Yes, what news?
He asked. Hello, Azur, I replied, perhaps taking liberties by using his first name when we were strangers, but strangers were almost certainly listening in, so we couldn't tell him we were Alliance operatives desperate for help. We just came from Deenan and tried Socket's noodles, like you suggested, but you didn't tell me how good her Nerf nuggets were. I'd say they were the best in the galaxy. Azur Nessun cocked his head to the side. The movement made his mutilated ear more noticeable, and I wondered if he did that on purpose.
Nerf nuggets, eh? I don't suppose you brought me any.
Saket hadn't told us how to respond to additional questions. If it was a test or a code of some kind, I didn't know the answer. Maybe it was a roundabout way of asking if our mission had been successful. Deciding to go with that, I said, Of course. Saket made a batch especially for you. The Kapoan righted his head and showed his teeth in a broad grin. The movement made the braids of his beard sway like vines in a gentle breeze.
Cannot wait. My place of residence has changed since we saw each other last. New coordinates at the end of transmission. See you soon.
His image winked out, replaced by a series of numbers that I asked R2 to input and execute into the autopilot. They were only slightly different from the course I had already set. Oh, and R2, since we're going to be limping in there with only one engine, can you give me an estimate of our arrival time? Drusel Beforin replied instantly over the intercom.